Hello and welcome to today's episode of Nucleus Investment Insights. As you're likely aware, stocks and bonds around the world have fallen this year, and yields now appear more attractive on the surface. Today, we're going to discuss seven things about higher yields that your fund manager likely won't tell you. Small disclaimer, Nucleus Wealth may be the exception to the rule, as this is a tell-all. Firstly, on the agenda, we'll delve into yields and see if you can trust these higher yields in stocks and bonds. Next, we'll explain what a yield trap is, where to spot them, and how to avoid them. So cash is returned to shareholders in similar proportions around the world. And in Australia, it comes in the form of dividends, and offshore, it comes in the form of share buybacks. So we'll examine why this is and the effects for shareholders. And then, as always, at the end, we'll discuss the investment implications for markets. My name's Sam Kerr. I'm the Senior Financial Advisor at Nucleus Wealth. Today, as always, I want to welcome the founder and chief investment officer at Nucleus Wealth, Damien Klassen.
Hey, Sam.
How are you going, Damo?
Not too bad.
That's good to hear. So just a quick housekeeping message before we get started. If you enjoy our content, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and click the bell below to be notified when we go live or have a new episode recorded. Alternatively, you can follow us on your preferred podcast platform. Our show's available on all the majors. And one other thing I want to mention, if you'd like to look at the slides in more detail, we'll post them in the show notes after this afternoon, and you can view them at nucleuswealth.com/webinars. So now we've got that housekeeping out of the way, we'll get started. So Damo, I'll hand it over to you to lead us away.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Sam. So I wanted to bit of a deep dive into yields at the moment. So obviously we've seen bonds, the bond yields have risen quite significantly. We've got, you know, the RBA with another 50 basis points of hike during the week. Now we're sort of yields are well above where they were even before the financial crisis. That you can get in terms of the official rate. And with stocks coming back, you know, that sort of helps a little bit at the yield front as well in terms of stock yield. So we just want to sort of have a run through for people who are looking at this market from a yield perspective and just sort of looking at what, you know, what's possible and what can you get from it. So the thing is, I'm going to start with some of the government bond yields, and then we'll work our way through into corporates, and then finally spend most of the time on the stock yields. I guess the first thing I wanted to start with is just really noting that real bond yields are negative still. So because we've got such high inflation at the moment, so if you look at real rates, so that's the yield you're getting above inflation is you're not. Basically, the only country that is getting a yield above inflation at the moment is China. Pretty much every other country is well below in terms of their core inflation. The thing is, though, this is a point in time. And so if you're buying bonds, and particularly, you know, I'm using 10-year bond rates here, you know, you're looking at it from over a longer period of time. And while we've had, inflation's obviously surged, inflation expectations in the last couple of months have actually started to turn around, and there's this what's starting to be priced into markets is what we've been saying for a little while, is that if the central banks raise their rates so quickly at the sort of short term end, what that's going to mean is you're headed for a recession if they rise too far, and there's a decent, you know, most of the time they do, and so you need to start tempering your expectations. And also that The other thing is, we've obviously got a lot of supply issues, particularly in Australia, and that's they're not things that can be fixed by raising rates. So if you've got we're seeing missing food right across the shelves in supermarkets at the moment. A lot of that's on the back of the floods and too much rain up and down the where a lot of those vegetables grow on the east coast of Australia. The RBA raising rates isn't going to fix that problem. In terms of energy costs, we're looking at significantly higher energy costs. The RBA raising rates isn't going to solve the world price of gas, and isn't going to solve the issues happening in the Ukraine and things like that. So I've got a chart up just sort of showing some expectations in the Australian market. So there's basically a few different ones there. and keeping in mind that they're all on a they're on a different time scale, these ones. But you're sort of looking at the market economists for sort of 1 year ahead inflation and expecting you know, high inflation there. 2 years ahead is starting to taper off. And the break-even price, which is basically what markets are pricing in for a 10-year inflation rate, that sort of rocketed up from, you know, 0.5% at the depths of the pandemic, when the pandemic first started, to sort of 2.5% by the start of this year. And now that's actually started to fade off now. So the expectations are actually starting to fade away for that.
So Damien, just quickly, can you explain the break-even rate? Is that where it, you know, goes from a negative yield to a zero yield?
Yes, I've got a few slides quite late in this where I'm talking about if you are worried about hyperinflation, how do you protect yourself from it? And there's a government bond. There's a whole series of government bonds out there, and both in Australia and the US and other countries as well, where what they do is they give you a bond which pays a very low yield, but the actual amount of dividend increases every year. The coupon, the interest payment, increases every year based on the inflation rate. So they're called inflation-adjusted bonds. And so the idea is, usually if you buy a government bond, you spend $100. In 10 years' time, you're going to get back another $100, and they'll pay you a dividend. It'll pay you an interest rate, you know, twice a year, and it's a fixed interest rate. Doesn't change regardless of whether interest rates go up or down in what the RBA does. You're sort of locked into those on a 10-year bond. On an inflation bond, is different. What happens is you might get it on a 1% yield. You buy it now for $100 at a 1% yield, but then the amount you're going to get back goes up at the rate of inflation every year. So in 10 years' time, you might get back, you know, $150 on that bond. And every year when it goes up, so if we have sort of, you know, 6% inflation this year, your bond will go from $100 to $106, and it's paying 1% of the $106. So your actual dollars received is actually increasing every year. And what that means is it helps to protect you from inflation, is the good part. The bad part is always trying to find it at a cost that's reasonable, because often you get a very, very low yield on these because you've got that inbuilt inflation protection. And so that's but we'll move on. So it's a long story, but the answer to your question is, if you use those bonds, those inflation-linked bonds, and see what people are paying for those, and compare that to the price of normal bonds, then you get what the inflation expectations are based on the market sort of break-even inflation rate.
Okay.
So your big issue now is, in terms of buying government bonds, is what's inflation doing? Now, I just wanted to highlight, I've got a quick chart up from CBA, just sort of highlighting the number of fixed rate home loans that are rolling over each period. So, as time goes on, more and more bonds will roll onto these higher rates. And so, you know, even if rates don't go any higher at all, or even if they fall a bit, you've still got a lot of people who locked in at much lower rates who, as they roll off, are going to be coming onto these higher rates. And so I just wanted to highlight that, because then I jump into the next chart, which is sort of showing inflation-linked bonds. And not inflation-linked bonds. It's showing the sources of inflation. So, and this is within Australia. It is different in the US, but you can see in the last quarter that the main, the exciting ones was transport. And so most of that is the higher fuel costs, and they have sort of reduced at the moment, but they're still much higher than they were a year ago. And so the question there is coming through to, you'll need to see oil prices get significantly higher for that to continue. You've got housing, where we've actually seen the housing flip around now. So from the previous quarter was quite a high contribution to now making a negative contribution. And the other big one is the food prices. I spoke about that, particularly in terms of shortages based on weather. So, you know, if you get more extreme weather events, that will keep going up. But you would expect, over time that you'll end up with a more normal weather patterns and those food prices would come back down. And so if it's the case that we've got the RBA trying to raise rates to rein in those, and we see house prices go the other way, fall quite significantly, then you could easily see that those real bond yields, which we spoke about, turning negative quite quickly. And so that's your sort of your core risk in terms of your bonds is now and trying to find a yield is saying, if there's this risk that bond yields will fall, then you need to be trying to lock in your bond rate now. So if you're not worried about that, if you think that bond yields are going to keep rising and inflation's going to keep going, then you want to be in more sort of floating rate notes or sort of short dated things like bank term deposits some shares, some corporate bonds, those types of things. If you're worried about things getting worse, then you want to be in longer dated government bonds is what you want to be in because what you're doing is you can lock in a higher rate right now, and if yields fall, you'll still get that higher yield, and that's where that's what the angle we've taken in terms of the bond side is trying to get into those longer term bonds. Some of that trade has already come through. We still think there's some left in it, but it's a decision that everyone needs to look at in terms of their portfolio and what they're trying to what they're trying to get from it. Our take is that if we've got people who need a sort of fixed amount of income, then those government bonds are quite good because it does give you that locks in that income over the next little while.
And Damien, with housing turning around from positive to negative, with the RBA raising rates, is that sort of reining in inflation? Is that what we're seeing there?
It's making a little bit of a difference to it at the moment. Our take is that's going to continue, and that when we look at the Australian economy, we tend to see an economy that's a lot more like a developed market than an emerging market than a developed market. It's very much based on commodity inflows, and that's typical of something you'd see in countries like Indonesia or a lot of countries in South America or South Africa, like these emerging markets that are very commodity dependent. But then Australia doesn't really have that has a much lower amount of manufacturing and a much higher level of services. And so you get this very different economy where it's largely based on that commodity income and then what's happening in the housing market, which is a huge part of the Australian economy and really drives a lot of downstream demand. And so our concern is that yes, houses start to fall. The RBA has largely been relying for the past sort of 10 years on lowering interest rates and getting people to go out and borrow more to buy houses, and then the downward flow in terms of furniture and all these things like that that go with it, plus bringing in lots and lots more people sort of keeps that whole construction going. That's running into a real headwind now. We're about to really see whether we're right, I suppose, in terms of the structure of the Australian economy is very much based on housing and bringing in more people. And when those both get cut off, and they do, and they seem to have been, that you'll get this reversal, and that will be quite devastating for the rest of the economy is our expectation. And part of that sort of comes through, there's when the RBA sort of made a few of its promises to keep rates low, a year or two ago, for an extended period of time. One of the things they did say as well that they're going to be very focused on wages and actually waiting to see wage growth come through, because for the past sort of 10, 15 years, the RBA has been forecasting that there will be wage growth, and that's why they're keeping interest rates high, and the wage growth just never comes through. And I've got a chart up just sort of showing now. the last couple of things, the last couple of reads of wage growth, and we can see they're still very low. You know, they're higher than what they were in sort of the depths of the pandemic, but that's not a very high bar to jump over. And, you know, as you can see on the chart I've got there, there's basically two lines. One, and this chart's showing a relationship between wages and unemployment. And the top line shows that, you know, when you had, you sort of had a series back in sort of the 90s and 2000s where there was this relationship between it. We'd end up getting quite high wage growth. So wage growth somewhere between sort of 3 and 4.5%. And the higher unemployment got, then the lower wages got, and vice versa. The flip side is where we sit today, where that line, that relationship's still the same, that, you know, higher unemployment means lower wages, but it's on this whole different scale where it's sort of shifted sort of almost 2% lower in terms of the where the actual wage growth is coming through. And so we really haven't seen, despite the fact that, you know, everyone's out there screaming and saying there's can't find workers, unemployment rates are at sort of record lows, we're just not seeing that feed through into actual wage growth. And in our view, that's what you need to actually start seeing an inflation cycle and actually start seeing inflation become entrenched and push higher. Otherwise, we're just looking at a supply shock where inflation shot up shortly and quite possibly comes out much lower on the other side. Okay, so hopefully that's set our background is very much depends upon what you're expecting in terms of economic growth. We're on the negative side. We're expecting weak economic growth and quite possibly a recession in Australia. What that means is we're trying to lock in the yields we can in terms of government bonds and things like that at higher yields. Whereas if you've got a different view, you want to be trying to get into some of the more short-term factors. The other thing I would note, I've got a couple of market sort of pricing charts up, and just sort of showing what Australia versus the US has been doing. So for a little while there, it looked as if in that we're expecting much higher yields. So despite what we see as an economy which is actually a lot more vulnerable to higher interest rates, in that very commodity dependent, and so when world economic growth slows, Australia will slow, and then very housing, lots and lots of debt, and very housing dependent, and lots of variable loans within the Australian housing system, is that the Australian yield should be trading less than the US yield. It went the other way for most of the first part of this year, and has reversed quite sharply in the last couple of weeks. So we're actually seeing now, yet on a 2-year basis, the Aussie bond yield is now sort of 0.5% below, and on the 10-year basis, it's almost back to sort of about 0.2 above it, whereas sort of it peaked at sort of 0.7-ish above in recent times. So, you know, it's 0.5% closer to that US spread. And we're expecting that to continue to come in over the next little while. So, I might skip forward onto, leave the bonds. So I'm going to skip forward a bunch of slides, actually, Sam, and jump to the corporate bonds.
Yes.
So that's sort of the, you know, one place for people looking for yield is then to jump into corporate bonds and say, okay, I can pick up a higher yield at the moment, and I've got a chart to sort of showing that, you know, the double B plus bonds are now back to sort of 6% in terms of your 5-year double B plus bonds, and you know, at a 6% return, sounds, you know, for many people that sounds like a reasonable a reasonable expectation for what they're going to get out of their investments. The issue is that corporate bonds, you don't want to own them if you are going into a recession. So if you're not going into a recession and everything's going to be fine, then, you know, you can pick up these yields somewhere between, you know, sort of 3.5% to 6%, depending upon how much risk you want to take in your bonds and sort of what the underlying quality of the bonds are. The issue is that yield that we've seen rising. There's two ways which corporate bonds get priced. One is relative to their government bonds. So it's about saying if I can buy a government bond at relatively risk free and get a 2.5% yield on that, then how much more will I pay to a corporate who wants to lend on the same basis? And the issue is if you map that relationship over time, you've got what's called a spread. And I've got another chart up here just showing that this is a US sort of high yield bonds. And at the moment, the difference between them is about 4.5%. So you get basically if you're on these high yield or sort of junk bonds, which are the most dangerous of the bonds, you can sort of get a 4.5% better return versus the government. But you can see from this chart that blows out when you run into times of problems. It sort of got to, well, back in 2008, it sort of got to 20%. At the start of the pandemic, it sort of got to 10%. Even sort of slowdowns back in 2012 and slowdowns in 2016 saw it rise to sort of 7.5% in terms of that spread. And so it can go a lot wider. And what that means is if it does go wider, then these bonds are going to lose money. And that's where the issue is. So your first issue on in terms of getting corporate bonds is that if we do go into recession, you'll lose. The government bond yields might come down, but the actual spread to corporate bonds goes up, and so you end up losing out in corporate bonds. So government bond yields end up being a good investment. Corporate bonds end up being a bad investment. The second part then is the actual losses. So if you do start seeing losses, a government bond, you can be reasonably confident that you'll get you give them $100, you get your $100 back. With corporate bonds, you always have the risk of default. And the more risk you're taking in terms of those, the more risk you end up in some of these that do default. And that obviously takes away from your end return as well. And so typically, you'd find, a couple of percent of these bonds and these high yield ones sort of might be closer to 10 or 15% of these high yield bonds can end up defaulting and getting, you get back anywhere from zero to most of your money back on that. But the average sort of tends to be less than 50%. And so, so the dangers of corporate bonds at the moment is if you think everything's fine, we're not headed for recession, then yep, corporate bond yields look pretty good. If you're in our camp where you're concerned about recession, then you're not jumping into corporate bonds. And the other thing with corporate bonds is their maturity tends to be shorter as well. So they're the types of things that are nice to own when the economy's booming and coming out of recession. Going into recession is not the type of thing not the time to be owning corporate bonds. Right. So that's sort of the fixed interest part of it. Then I wanted to jump into dividend yields. So you can get some pretty good yields on the Aussie market at the moment. And I just sort of wanted to dig into the numbers behind that because it's not quite as good as what it might look like. And it's worth noting that the Australian market is very different to what you see overseas. So I've got a longer term chart here showing the difference between dividend payout ratios in Australia and overseas. And what it's showing is that up until the 90s, they were pretty correlated to each other. So what you saw in Australia was part of the globe. The global economic cycle would get better or worse, and Australian companies would pay out more or less of their dividends, pretty much in line with what we're seeing overseas. Then we had a change in the tax structure, and a couple of different changes, but the main one is franking credits, where not only can you get your tax back in on Australian yields, but even if you didn't pay tax, so pensioners and people like that, you can actually get tax back that you didn't even pay. And so what that means is that Australian companies tend to try and pay the dividends out to use up all their franking credits, regardless of whether they want to pay a dividend or not. And then what you see is they might do a capital raise or a dividend reinvestment plan or something like that, which is effectively basically saying, you know, here to shareholders, right, here's a dollar's worth of dividend, and now can I have 50 cents of it back? Because I couldn't afford to pay you a dollar, but I need that 50 cents for, you know, investments I want to make or things like that. And so if you do some adjustments for it, I've got a two slides on. There's like I've got one that actually adjusts and looks at adding in buybacks as well. So what it's saying here is if you look at Australian payout ratio just as dividends versus profit, but if you actually look at the buybacks that other countries are doing, you end up with something looking much closer to what's happening in Australia and much more similar. And so I guess the message behind that is, in the way I look at it, is that companies have a certain amount of money they want to pay back to shareholders. Sometimes companies will choose to do that through a buyback. Sometimes they'll choose to do that through a dividend. And internationally, what you tend to see is that companies will try and keep a level of dividend that they know they're pretty confident they can keep paying out year after year. And the buyback is sort of the swing factor where there's some extra money, right, we'll do a buyback, and that'll add to returns. And so and what that means for shareholders is if a company's doing a buyback, you tend to get it back. You tend to get the share price increased by the amount of the buyback, so because they cancel a number of shares. So what I guess I mean by that is, let's say you can get a 5% yield in Australia, or you can get a 3% yield buying international stocks, and you can get 2% extra return because international stocks have bought back 2% more shares than what Australians have. So they've shrunk the number of shares, and everyone's ended up with a bigger slice of pie. And so, when you look at it from that perspective, it's this question about how do you want to get your returns? If you need it as a dividend for whatever reason, but if you can get it as a buyback, often it can be more tax effective for people, and especially overseas, to be receiving that money as a buyback. So that's one part of it. Then the next part of it is just getting onto this, are these dividend yields, the types of dividend yields you can get in Australia, and certainly that you did receive in Australia for the last year, are they too good to be true? So I pulled up the top 10 stocks paying dividends over the last year. And within that, you can see Fortescue sort of paying 16% dividend at the top, and then reducing that back to next year. Rio with a significant dividend as well, similar with BHP. I've highlighted the ones and Woodside. So you look, what I'm noting there is these are resource companies which are not typically stable dividend payers. So resource companies overseas tend not to pay much in the way of dividends at all. They get their money. They take that money, they go and reinvest in finding new mines or the next mine expansion. What tends to happen in Australia is they pay out their franking credits, and then they'll raise capital if they need to go and or take on more debt to go and actually do the expansion or find the new resources. So when you hit speed bumps, they're not the companies that are going to keep paying those dividends. You get these huge drops in terms of the amount of dividends paid by those companies as you head into downturns. And whereas a company like a utility or like a real estate trust tend to be a lot more stable with the dividends that they're paying. And also on this chart, that's sort of I've highlighted the difference between this year and next year, and it comes back a lot to what we were talking about last week, which is the Australian market is dominated by resources and banks. And so what that means is you are getting a higher yield in Australia, but part of that as well is certainly at the moment is the makeup of our market. And so if you were if you're looking at sort of the Australian market versus other markets, and on a sector by sector basis, say you're looking at real estate, Well, Australia is actually paying slightly less yield than in real estate than what you'd see in, say, developed Asia or in the right throughout Europe. If you look at utilities, Australia is paying about the same, you know, less than Asia, again, less than Europe. As you run through the industrial sector, you know, it varies on a sector by sector basis, but largely you can find that Australian yields slightly above international competitors, and so when you're looking at the Australian market, yes, you get a higher yield, but you're doing it because you've decided effectively to go extra into resources and extra into financials. And so the question sort of needs to come back: if you're worried about the stability of the dividend, then Aussie market dividends, you know, might not be something you want to rely on over that time. Is that making sense, Sam?
Yeah, absolutely. That's making sense. But I guess, you know, from last week's episode, when you actually strip out those the resources and the banks, the financials, it's a different picture, isn't it? The dividends tend to be a bit more stable.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. That's right. So if you're looking for those, and so, you know, to put that into perspective, though, so, you know, you can get if you look at the Aussie market, on materials and energy, you can get over a 7% yield for next year, looking at those ones. However, if you pull back and you start looking at your industrials or consumer discretionary and things like that, you're getting more like a 3 to 3.5% yield. So, and keeping in mind that, you know, the US, the yield you're getting is sort of in the 2 to 3 range on those same stocks, and in Europe, it's somewhere in the 3 to 4. Okay. So I guess what I'm getting to is, you've got the Australian market where we are paying out more than what's paying overseas, but also you've got this element of the dividend yields for the stable stocks aren't that different to what you can get elsewhere. And there's plenty of other markets where you can get better yields.
Okay, that all makes sense.
Mm. So I'm going to jump to show two different charts. Well, actually, so I'll step through this. First, I've got a chart on dividend yields on the ASX over the last sort of 30 or 40 years. And you can see that the yields have been quite volatile. You know, they've gone from 7% back to, you know, below 3%. You know, on average, you sort of average about a 4%, which is roughly where we are at today. If you look then at a similar chart, I do want to say it's stable for long periods of time, and then you get these sudden big jumps typically around resource booms or as you come in and out of recessions and companies kind of cut their dividends. Then I've got another chart which is showing a similar one, and it's the red line to focus on, which is the dividend yield for the US market. And you can see that that's far less volatile. That tends to be a lot more stable. And that's the that's this idea that that the resources stocks in your the overweight to resources stocks really does make a difference in terms of the overall volatility of Australian dividends. And then I've got another chart. Actually, I'm going to jump to the dividends first, Sam, which is just showing the actual dollar amount of dividends paid in billions of dollars on the S&P 500. And so it does tend to go up. You know, it's a little bit volatile, but it does tend to go up year after year after year. You can see in the COVID time, it sort of fell around about 10%, the amount you got. A much bigger fall in the financial crisis, sort of down about 20%. But by and large, you know, it is a relatively stable dividend stream that you get across that. Then I'll go to the same graph, same type of graph, but it's actually showing the buybacks. And this one's particularly volatile, though. Like it goes, you know, in 2003 it was 150 billion. By 2007 it was 750 billion. And then a couple of years later it's back to 150 again. And then, you know, the COVID hits in recent times, and it sort of went from 950 billion back to 350 billion, and then back up to over $1 trillion in buybacks in recent quarters. And that's what I'm trying to get to is that in terms of stocks, when you look at international stocks, you've basically got these two, you've got this stacked overflow. One is that dividend that's pretty stable and you're not rely completely on it, but it's if you've got a diversified portfolio, you can sort of keep in mind that garden variety recessions, you might see a 10% fall in it. Big recessions, you might see a 20% fall in it, but that actual dividend yield is relatively stable throughout time. Whereas the buyback sitting on top of it is the volatile part where companies have extra money, they give it out. They don't have extra money, they don't give it out. And effectively what we're seeing in Australia is you're sort of seeing those two stacked on top of each other anyway because of the way our tax system is set up. And so, there's probably an underlying more stable dividend on the Australian market, but because of the tax system, because of the exposure to resources, dividends in Australia are going to be more volatile than what you're going to see elsewhere, as a rule. So, yeah. So that's does that all making sense, Sam?
Yes. That all makes sense. We're all following along so far.
Yep. And then the final thing I just wanted to show in terms of that diversification was when you look at the correlations between different sectors is that sort of gives you that other part as well. So that if you're buying, I've highlighted, say, the utility sector versus the information technology, and just highlighting that, on the utilities, you get those more stable dividends versus the information technology where it is more volatile. But the flip side is, and you will also get a more stable share price and something that's not as correlated to what's happening elsewhere. So the dividend stocks do tend to be, if you are going into recession and you're in a sector that's not being smashed by it, then you will likely see that those you'll get a better performance as well as picking up those dividends on it. Having said that, it is that idea about each time's different, and there's obviously some question marks on particular types of real estate at the moment. So real estate tends to be a more stable version, but given the interest rate rises and the extreme price rise we've seen in real estate, and then all the pandemic changes, you just need to examine those your assumptions carefully as to whether which sectors you want to be in if you're worried about downturn. So that's sort of the overview of how to get. So we've spoken about corporate bonds, government bonds, and stocks. I didn't put a slide in on hybrids, but I would like to highlight, I guess, in terms of hybrids, that the issue for hybrids is that they tend not to be so these are the hybrid notes you tend to get in Australia that you don't get overseas. So the yields you get paid on those hybrids are typically below what professional investors would expect. So they're nice and easy to access, these yields. The corporate bond market in Australia is very small, whereas overseas it's very large. So if you're an investor in the US, you don't bother buying hybrids because you can go into the corporate bond market and get better returns and more appropriate returns for the amount of risk you're taking. I guess I just want to highlight that most professional investors look at the Australian hybrid market and feel that it's overpriced because it's so easy for retail investors to buy them, and those same retail investors don't tend to have other options. And then the other side is a lot of the hybrids come out of banks, and so because the banks, because if we're heading to a recession and there are going to be concerns about banks and housing starts to fall and issues with bad debts, then you can certainly see those hybrids, which might seem like a great deal, you lose out on the price as well as losing out you pick up a higher return, but you lose out on the price and the whole thing nets out at a loss. So it's hybrids.
So Damien, we've had a question come through from Cam. So he's asking if we think the negative correlation between shares and bonds, between shares and bond yields, will that restart soon, reassert?
Yeah, I do think so. That's certainly what we're playing for. The view is, look, if you go into a recession, earnings will get hit stocks will get hit on that basis, and people's expectations on what interest rate's going to do will come down, and that's what's going to drive that negative correlation. So you'll see stocks falling and bonds rising. I guess your alternative is that we truly are in this boom a new inflation cycle, and that inflation will keep going up. And if that's the case, then you won't see you'll continue to see a positive relationship between the two. So our take is the last 6 months, investors have had a view that there's a positive, the inflation is going to last for a while, and the last 6 months has been a realization that the word transient might mean longer than sort of 3 or 4 months worth of inflation. It might mean a year or 2 years of inflation, and then the Ukraine war sort of added to that, and that's what we think drove both bonds and stocks down at the same time. If it's going into recession, we would expect the more typical relationship to reassert itself at that point. And so then finally, hyperinflation. So if you are really concerned about inflation, and you're looking at 10-year, and you're looking at these what they call in the US TIPS, and in Australia it's the inflation adjusted bonds. So I've got a chart up just sort of showing the difference between the US government 10-year bond and what you can get on an equivalent 10-year inflation adjusted bond. So on a 10-year bond at the moment, you can get 2.7%. On the inflation linked bond, you can get 0.23%. So with the view that inflation will be higher than sort of 2.5%, if it is higher than 2.5% over that 10-year period, then you'll be in front. And if it's below that, then you would have been better off buying the 10-year bonds. So that's as a long-term investor, if you're worried about inflation, these things work really well. So, if you're expecting 10% inflation to go on for a considerable period of time, if you got, so let's say we have 10% inflation for 5 years and 5% inflation for the other 5 years over the next 10. So you're sort of averaging 7.5%. In the TIPS, you're going to get, almost 8% return by investing in those. On the buying and so you will beat inflation in those. If you're buying treasuries, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get 2.73% return, and you're going to be behind inflation. So yeah, if you're worried about hyperinflation, the TIPS are the place to be. The issue is, if you want to trade the TIPS, and if you're actually looking at it and you're looking at the value of your portfolio over that period of time, then keep in mind that the TIPS will vary more based on the yields than what they will the inflation expectations, because the inflation expectations occur over gradually over that 10-year period. I've got another chart just sort of showing up the some of these inflation-linked, 10-year inflation-linked bonds over the last 12 months. And so you can see that they didn't do as badly as the fixed bonds, but you're still down 5% and a bit so far this year. So you're protected from inflation, and you, over the 10-year period, if you bought that bond, you will get that protection from inflation. But the capital value of these will still change up and down based upon what people are expect for bonds, plus what they expect for inflation. So the danger of buying inflation-linked bonds today is that if inflation expectations do fall, then you will end up losing out on these. And that's that final chart I've got there, which is just showing that you expected inflation at the moment is 2.5%. It's been as high as 3% at the start of this year, and that was what sort of drove that price up, and then as expectations fell back, that's what sort of helped to contribute to the losses. If those losses go down, and you can see that in recent recessions they've sort of fallen below 1%, that's where the danger is if you're trading these. If you're not trading them, forget about the price. Worry about the fact you're getting a dividend. You're getting an interest rate. Sorry, that is at the moment whatever it is, a quarter of a percent, but it's going to go up at the rate of inflation. And at the end of your time period, you give them $100 today, you'll get back $100 plus any inflation that happens over that time period. So worried about hyperinflation, then go with these. For us, it's not something we're deeply invested at the moment. We have some in our portfolio just as a hedge, but the pricing just sort of doesn't work for us at the moment. At various times, we do change that around. But for me, inflation in bonds, I'm not expecting hyperinflation. And so that's where we haven't included that as a large part of the portfolio.
Okay, nice one, Damo. We're a little bit light on viewer questions today. You must have done an excellent job of explaining it.
Well, or it's bonds, so nobody's. it's not as exciting. I'm fully aware of that. But we do have a number of yield investors, and it is worth looking at bonds, from a time to time, just for a better view in terms of a richer view in terms of what your alternatives are to shares.
Yeah, sure. We've actually just had another question come through from Craig. So he's asking, if there is a recession and Australia is badly affected, do you think Australian bond yields could rise due to the higher perceived risk by overseas investors?
Yeah, look, I don't. It would have to be a very, very deep recession, and commodity prices would have to be considerably affected by it. And I think on both those fronts, we're expecting, say, metals to be affected. I still think there's going to be a fair bit of strength in terms of the energy markets because of what's going on in Europe. So if you're a country that has the ability to print its own money and you don't have lots of debt based in denominated in foreign currencies, then you're pretty right to get through crises. If either of those isn't true, so European countries that don't have the access to a printing press, or a lot of emerging markets that have a lot of their debt priced in US dollars, then you can run into problems because if your currency falls, then the value of your debts actually goes up because it's all priced in US dollars, and you run into issues that you might see like in Sri Lanka or you've seen at various times in Turkey and South America. In terms of that, they run into these debt crises. Australia doesn't have very much priced in US dollars, and so the ability for the Aussie dollar to just to drop, and that then means that more people start coming to Australia for holidays, more people start buying Australian goods, hiring people in Australia because it's so much cheaper. And that sort of helps to bring automatic stabilizers that help sort of bring countries back out of recession if they're out of recession in out of sync. So no, I'm not particularly concerned about Australian bonds. There might be a small bit put into it, but I'd be very surprised if there was any significant increase in the risk in terms of Australian government bonds on that front.
Okay, great. Thanks for that. We'll move on to the viewer question of the week. So this is for viewers to have some discussion in the comment section over the coming days. The question for this week is, has the bond opportunity passed or is there more to come? So feel free to post your thoughts and engage with us and some of the other viewers over the coming days. And now we've got the investment implications.
Mm. So look, I'll keep it relatively quick on these. We've obviously got a reasonable bear market rally going on at the moment. So, or the start of a new bull market. This is a question. So, stock markets have jumped considerably after an extremely weak June, and then sort of jumped back into a very strong July. If earnings hold up, then and central banks sort of fade from where they are now, then maybe there's you can come up with a bull market thesis. Our take is that neither of those are likely to happen. Is that we've started to see signs in terms of earnings starting to roll over. interest rates were only started rising sort of in March and April. So, you know, you won't even see the in the sort of June quarter where these numbers are coming from. It's unlikely that we would have actually seen, you know, much of an effect of those interest rates yet. That's going to come more in the second half of the year. And so we're sort of more interested in terms of the third quarter and the fourth quarter, sort of proving that point. So if that's the case, then you still want to steer clear of stocks, stay with your bonds, you know, take advantage of the falling yields, and then look to move into them later. We can always admit we might be wrong, but my take very much at the moment is still that this is we're in a bear market rally, and you know, bouncing off sort of oversold levels, but there's further downside to come as the central banks keep on tightening, and as we start seeing the effects of those central banks tightening, and weaker earnings in the coming months.
Nice one, Damien. Thanks for that. So just want to thank you for your time today, sharing your expert opinions as always.
Thanks, Sam.
Awesome. So we look forward to our next episode. So we do welcome your feedback on this podcast, especially in regards to suggestions for future topics. If you do have any ideas, please drop it in the comments section below or send us an email at contact@nucleuswealth.com. Just a reminder, this is general advice, and if you do want to discuss your personal financial situation, please go to our website at nucleuswealth.com/contact and book a call with me or one of the team. Don't forget to like the video now. And finally, if you know of anyone that might get some value out of today's episode, we'd really appreciate it if you can please share it with them. Also, if you'd like to see more of our previous episodes and content, head over to nucleuswealth.com/content. And to stay up to date with news from us, you can also follow us on all major social media. So for myself, Damien, and the rest of the team at Nucleus Wealth, thanks for watching, and we look forward to seeing you next time. Bye for now.